Welcome to A Week in the News and this week's Budget Breakdown edition. I'm your host Chris Scott and I'm joined by Mike Kelly, our agenda writer, and Kate Proctor, our local government reporter. As you can imagine, what we're going to be focusing on today is George Osborne's final budget before the general election, how it affects the North East, and where it positions each party going into this summer's vote. Now Mike, in front of me I have the journal front page from last Thursday, the day after the budget, which simply reads, "What about the North East?" People in the region don't seem to be too happy and feel neglected by the Chancellor. Why is that?
Well, very little seemed to be mentioned of the North East. It was in fact conspicuous by its absence. While plans for down south were detailed at great length and there was much cheering behind George Osborne when he outlined them, there seemed very few mentions of the North East at all. It just seemed we were again feeding crumbs off the rich man's table. There were little things which generally everyone received, from beer duty going down, which is nice, one pence a pint, I'm sure we'll all enjoy that, cider tuppence a pint, I'm a fan of cider, so I was secretly glad about that. But the big projects seemed to be concentrating down south. It left a lot of questions to be answered, like how we are going to recover from the austerity that we have been enduring for the last 5 years. He actually seemed to pointedly ignore the North. The North wasn't the only thing he ignored, it was the NHS. So it seemed like the North East has been bracketed in with the NHS of the policies you shouldn't speak about. So that's why the concerns were there, because he seemed to have no plans for the North at all. And coming up to election, you'd have thought he would have come up with something just as a sop to the public, so that's very concerning.
There seemed to be a lot of nodding, as you said, Mike, behind him. The Conservatives seemed very happy with the speech. Kate, from a right-wing perspective, from a Conservative Tory perspective, why did they seem so happy?
I think they'll be really happy with George Osborne's personal performance, because really policy is obviously very important, but I think for voters it kind of, you know, within a few days it's almost forgotten about, and what they will remember is the feeling and the performance at the time. And I think the whole point of that budget, like any budget before a general election, is to show that you're in control, you're the person who has the budget in safe hands, the country's economy is in safe hands. And I think in terms of performance he did an excellent job actually, and I think, you know,
he's peacocking basically, yeah, for potential voters this summer.
Of course, and I think it was that authoritative kind of tone that he took, and I think for lots of people that would have been convincing.
Right, so let's get into the, you know, the nitty gritty of it. First of all, the Northern powerhouse seemed to be the thing that everybody took from it. They had a hilarious hashtag on Twitter where people were making all these jokes about, actually, we do have water up here in the North, we do have electricity. And the Northern powerhouse seemed to me to be the Leeds Manchester powerhouse. Why is there no devolution for the North East and other areas of the country, Kate?
I think it's fair to say that the budget focused on the North, but its concept of the North doesn't include the North East. And we did have a little bit, there was a few nods there. There was some money for the chemical industry in Teesside. There was, you know, aside from that, Gates had got some investment for a new housing project. But when you talk about the Northern powerhouse, I think we up here think that it doesn't really include the North East. And other parts of the country have had successful devolution deals. Manchester has been given an incredible sort of raft of powers, Sheffield as well, and then during the budget we heard that Yorkshire's Combined Authority has also been given its own devolution deal. The North East, I think the criticism would be that our Combined Authority, first of all, hasn't asked for anything yet. We haven't actually got a devolution package together. We haven't asked the government what we'd like. But also there is criticism that the leadership within the North East is not, they're not all singing from the same hymn sheet. And I think at the moment, perhaps the North East doesn't create the same like harmonious picture that other areas have.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I mean, I suspect the North East leaders are so downtrodden, they think, why ask when you're not going to get? Perhaps they're waiting for May to come along, they're waiting for a change of government, so perhaps their pleas will be heard more, they'll be heard more there, so perhaps that's what they're waiting for. I think the North East has lagged behind in what it requests from the government. I think the North West, particularly Manchester, they seem to be the golden boys of Britain at the moment, and they seem to be getting whatever they want. It is a problem for the North East. I mean, even small mentions for what the North East required, there was suggestions that the air passenger duty tax might be amended. It sounds a small point, but this could have a massive impact on the North East if it isn't. This is why your tickets when you travel abroad are so expensive, probably one of the most expensive in the world. This is put on when you buy your tickets. North Newcastle International Airport suffers from it, but because the new power's going to Scotland, they'll be allowed to either lower it or even abolish it. This could cost about 20% of the jobs at Newcastle Airport. There's 3,200 people employed there. There was some hope of a mention of that during the budget, but it wasn't. However, the following day, it was left to David Cameron to come back and say, oh, we haven't forgotten about you, so here's a little sop to you.
Yeah, there seem to be a few different issues, as you said, Mike. You know, what we took as, you know, the news outlet was some of the most important things were the things that the Chancellor didn't say rather than what he did say. And do you have anything else on that?
Well, yeah, the main thing about that was I was actually watching the budget, and it was, as usual, very raucous, very loud, people waving their papers about. But there's, for a couple of seconds, there's a very brief silence when he announced that public spending was going to begin to grow again at the back end of the next Parliament if they were elected. Now, there was silence there because that was completely unexpected as people tried to figure out what that meant. That meant austerity is ending. Is he going to pull? This is going to be the biggest rabbit he's going to pull out with a hat. But then, of course, it comes out the next day that this would mean, this is according to the Office of Budget Responsibility, that in order to fulfil his pledges, because he didn't say how he's going to do it, the only way he could do it was to drastically cut public sector, and that would make what we're going to endure in the next 2 or 3 years seem like a slap around the face compared to what we've already suffered up to now. So that was the biggest concern that's come out of this budget.
That's a real concern for North East councils. I mean, it was said yesterday, Nick Forbes, the leader of Newcastle City Council, he knows, and they are all expecting public spending and the budgets they're going to get from the government to severely plummet, to really nosedive. And they talk already about the fact this government is taking us back to the 1930s in terms of public spending. And certainly from the leaders in the North East, I think that's certainly what they expect to be on the horizon.
Yeah, particularly if they did a bit of number crunching. They think in order to fulfil that commitment, he has to save an extra £12 billion. And where's that money going to come from? I mean, obviously public services, but how much fat is left on the public service? It's more like a skeleton now. So where is he going to find the cuts there?
Definitely.
Well, the fear is the money's going to come out of the NHS. I mean, that's what Ed Miliband said. They can't deliver on what they've promised. So actually, the NHS is not going to be as well protected as people think.
It is extraordinary. NHS, before, it was something that every government, no matter what its hue, would always at least pay lip service to protecting. But in that budget, he didn't say a word. That was an extraordinary omission on his part. It was an omission at all. Yeah. He just chose to cut it loose.
Yeah, and huge obviously concern. It's good news for the North East. Whilst public spending might cut, the good news for the North East is that the oil and gas industry has been given $1.3 billion in tax cuts and support, and there's obviously quite a few workers, we have 65,000 who, you know, were fearing further job cuts. So he's given with one hand but seemingly taken with the other in that respect.
Yeah, I think you know, what he announced for the oil and gas industry was really important. I think other things people look favourably would be the tax-free personal allowance, and that will go up to £11,000.
For those who don't know, Kate, could you kind of explain what that is?
Yeah, so that's the amount that you can earn before you have to pay income tax. And so since 2010, the amount you can earn has gone up, and I think that's been a real Lib Dem driver, actually. That's a policy they've been really keen on.
So they're doing something then?
Yeah.
They're actually doing something, so...
Well, I think...
We haven't seen much evidence of that.
It depends what your views are on tax, but I think if you, you know, what does the budget mean to you? Does it mean I'm going to pay more to fill up my car with petrol? What is my wage slip going to look like? Immediately, you know, there are a few things you can pick out from day-to-day life, and I think the tax-free personal allowance, I think that's something that people do remember and they do think about, and actually, you know, I haven't been taxed as much, and I think that kind of thing going up to an election sticks in people's minds.
It is a good idea, but on the flip side, it's for the North East will benefit, but a lot of people won't, because we've got such low wages up here as has been identified this week.
Yeah, exactly. So even earn more than £11,000 in a year, that would be quite hard in many areas of this region.
It's a good issue to bring up, Mike, because actually you wrote this piece on Wednesday, I think it was, because just prior to the budget announcement, David Cameron was very keen to, you know, champion how the unemployment cuts and unemployment's down to, I believe, down from 9.2% in the northeast to 7.8%, which is quite remarkable, really. However, as you wrote, wages have also gone down.
Well, going back to the unemployment figures, yeah, they've come down 9.2% to 7.8% in the last quarter, which is good. But of course, the northeast, its figures far and away the highest in the country. I think the English average is 5.7%, if my memory serves me right. It was good news. The claimant count is down, but again, the claimant count is the highest in the country. So yeah, but on the flip side to that, as we approach the election coming into the spring, where salaries are supposed to go up, they actually came down. They actually, I think, dropped by 5% a week, an average salary, 5% a week. Doesn't sound much when you say it like that, but if you factor it in over the year, you factor in inflation. I know it's low, but it's still positive. It costs a lot of money, and we all know we're all having to tighten our belts.
Where are these extra, does anybody know where these extra jobs are coming from? Are we looking at 0-hour contracts? Do we know yet where these jobs have come from?
I do find the release of unemployment or employment figures generally bamboozling as a reporter. Like, you have to sift through so much, and it is always unclear, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I think you'd agree. When you analyse these figures, it leaves a lot of questions, and for me, it's always about, so you might have got, you might be in work, but, you know, 8 hours a week or whatever, that's not very sustainable. And also, we see all the time people having their shifts cancelled, 0 hours contracts, the uncertainty around that. Mm-hmm. And, I think that in this region, that's still not really been addressed. I think people aren't in the right kind of jobs up here, even if they are working. And you can tick a sheet on a spreadsheet to say they are in work, we have found them a job, but it's what kind of work they're doing.
It is. There is a bigger story that sadly I haven't got to be able to get to the bottom of yet. We look through the figures each month. It reveals what the latest unemployment figures, what the claimant count is, what the employment rates are. Now, you'd think if unemployment is going down, it would still be a balance between it and the employment figure. They never quite marry. The claimant count is astonishing, drops 30-odd%, I think, in the last year. If you look at the numbers, you talk about thousands of people, but that isn't reflected in the amount of people who've got jobs. Who are these people? Where are they? I don't know if it's particular to the northeast, but we do seem to have an awful lot of people on low-paid jobs. The 0 hours contracts we talk about, is there a black hole? These people are disappearing down.
Yeah, George Osborne, one thing that struck me when he was talking on Wednesday was he said he's regulated these 0 hour contracts. I'm looking at it going, I haven't seen any evidence of this. And another thing he said, which I thought was quite baffling, was about the child poverty rates. And Kate, I know you tweeted about this at the time. He said child poverty, he's lowered child poverty and to like all these different percentages,
yeah,
as you
so,
said.
You know, from 2010, the stories we were doing was about child poverty increasing, and I don't know where he's got that figure from, that child poverty's gone down, but from the research and from the charities that work in the northeast, they wouldn't say that. And I think the fact that 50% of children in Biker live in child poverty, whether the figures are going down or not, that is absolutely unacceptable in the UK. And I thought that was a really, really terrible part of the budget. I just thought, gosh, I can't believe you would even bring that up as something to champion. It's not just this area, you know, the child poverty in parts of the UK goes up to 66-68% in Newcastle, you know, in Alnwick and in Biker. They're some of the poorest places in the country. So to say, you know, we are tackling child poverty and that things are going down, I just think, you know, I just didn't think that was, you know, anything to, you know, write home about, really.
It's 2015 and we've still got child poverty.
Exactly.
And we've still got homeless people.
Exactly.
It's 2015.
Yeah.
So that if it's not solved, don't bring it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, spot on.
I was going to say, it's extraordinary. You see, I still speak about child poverty, not just because it's 2015. we're talking about being in an economic recession, yet I think just this week the share price index went up to about its highest ever level. I'm not a 100% expert on this, but surely that means this country is awash with money. So if that we're awash with money, taxes are being paid on it, so surely the country should be much better off. Sadly, it doesn't seem to be so, at least for the people who need the help the most. There was an interesting graph which was published showing who has been affected by the cuts most, and it was like a shape like Mount Everest. On the bottom of the left side was poor people who have been affected. I think they've lost about 5% less well off than at the start of this government, then rocketed up the top of Mount Everest to the middle earners. Then it actually, funny enough, came down. The high earners, they've lost about as much as the poor people. They can cope with that.
Shockingly.
Well, yeah, and that's something Cheryl Cole's been whinging about today.
Yeah, Cheryl Cole is, I think
upset about the amount of tax she has to pay.
I think she's forgot her roots. She forgot where she's come from. She's living in a luxury apartment, and she's saying, you know, she's moaning about the mansion tax. You know, beyond me, but people will make their own minds up, because some people don't agree with the mansion tax. Speaking of housing, that was another thing that came out of the budget, was the housing, Kate.
This was really, really great news for Gateshead. So they've actually kept this really under wraps. They've not shouted about this at all, but they've been working really hard over the last couple of years to come up with a new idea for a neighbourhood. So it sits at the southern end of the High Street. It's called the Exemplar Neighbourhood, which is a real kind
pompous
of
pompous name.
Yeah, I mean, it's
if you're looking for one.
Extremely full-on vision of how the future should be. But it's a model community, and what they're basing it on is living standards that are more often seen in continental Europe, and they want to make sure that people have family homes that are actually side by side with commercial activity. So it's rather than the suburbs idea, it's bringing people right into the middle of the town and to be near the economic bases. But this land, a bit of it's run down, some of it's old shops, so there's a lot of work to do. So the cash that the government is going to give them is to redevelop this site, clear it up from contamination. It's about getting brownfield sites back into use.
How much is it? About £10 million?
No, they get, well, we don't know for certain. All we do know at the moment is they get a share of the general pot, which is £200 million.
Right.
And Gateshead is the only place in the North East to get this. There's a couple of places in Yorkshire, but I thought that really stood out, actually. I mean, Gateshead Council's obviously done some really good work, and the government must be pretty keen to see this housing project happen.
I think we called them a surprise winner in the paper. Was this completely unexpected?
It was an absolute surprise, because when I spoke to the council on the morning of the budget, I just said, you know, what are you thinking for your exemplar neighbourhood? And they said, well, we've not heard a bean, we've not heard anything at all. And we think that we've lost it, actually. We think we've lost the money. We think we've been dropped from the core shortlist. And then later that night, they get a phone call from the government. So whichever, government department that
sounds
was.
Sounds a bit scary.
It did sound a little bit official, a call from the government. I think they were shocked, actually.
Right, and so now from nothing, they're looking at up to 1,000 homes?
Up to 1,000 homes. It'll be over a really long period of time. It could take 20 years, but the funding is in place to get it off the ground. And for Gateshead, I think that's really important. A lot of development's happened in the town centre, and this is another phase in really changing how Gateshead is as a community.
Cool. All right, so to finish off then, we'll talk about where the speech has kind of positioned each party going into it. Obviously, we'll start with the opposition. Start with Labour. What did you make of Mr. Miliband's rebuttal?
He did well. He repeated claims that it was, funny enough, that it was a south-centric budget, not much for the north-east. He had his usual pop at Cameron, the Bullingdon boy, etc., and with Osborne. He came back well. He said that more should be done. He outlined the plans of Labour. But overall, I think Osborne did a good job for the Tories. As Kate said earlier, a safe pair of hands. It was actually funny watching this speech as they were given many of the policies, the popular policies he's come up with, like raising the tax-free personal allowance and obviously the first-time buyer's ISA. We were just been talking about that, the Dem policies, but you would have been loath to find that out. Because at one stage, after being shouted at across the House by Labour, what about the Lib Dems, funnily enough, he eventually said, yes, this coalition government headed by a Conservative Chancellor has come up with these plans. It didn't reflect well enough on the Lib Dems. I think they've got a bit of a kicking over the 5 years.
Yeah.
I think they have come up with some good ideas. I think these two are specific ones.
Well, if you look back to 2010, then from what I remember, it was apathy, dissatisfaction with the current government, the current Labour government under Brown, and the Lib Dems come along and really rocked the boat, and that's how we've ended up where we are now. The Lib Dems are struggling when it comes to voters, surely, Kate.
I don't agree, to be honest. I think, you know, they are going to get a kicking, but I don't think we're going to see them absolutely wiped out. And, you know, from what I've heard, they're still expecting to get about 25 seats. So that would be half what they have now. But I don't think that we've seen the end of the Lib Dems. And I think, you know, they're going to be there. They are going to be the party again that is fought over, because it's perhaps likely they're going to form a coalition again, and I think Lib Dems know that, and I think, you know, Nick Clegg said that recently as well, that essentially you will need us again. So I think right now, actually, I think Danny Alexander did a good job in getting some of that. You know, it's taken a day or two, but I think he has hammered home which ones were the Lib Dem policies. So I don't think they'll get a kicking, but from the budget, I think, like I said, it's all theatre and it's drama, but I think George Osborne was convincing in that, in his performance, in that whole safe pair of hands idea. I think, you know,
but
you
not overly convincing, because you've just said that you still think it's going to be a hung parliament by when everything's said and done in May. So they can't have done that good of a convincing job, not only on Wednesday, but over the last 5 years.
Oh, well, I mean, the financial situation this country faced, just a catastrophic. I think they would, you know, sweep the board. I just don't think that's...
I think it's interesting, in as much, if you looked at the polls afterwards, it didn't make much of a dent on the polls at all. I think Labour was still slightly ahead. Now, if you bear in mind, if you look on superficially the figures they produced about the economy going up, jobs going up, wealth going up, the tax breaks he's introduced here, you'd have thought they've got some sort of bounce, but it kind of has remained steady. So it's interesting to see how
they're not the nasty party. They're not going at this point in people's minds. I really don't think that's what people feel.
And so we're talking about the Lib Dems losing around half the seats. Then who's going to take that? Who's going to fill the vacuum? Is that going to be Labour and Conservatives coming in, or are we going to see the rise of a UKIP? A surprise party coming in from the sides?
I think with UKIP, I mean, possibly possibly a seat or two in Yorkshire, possibly in the southeast.
In the northeast, I don't know. There's some names, some constituencies mentioned.
Yeah, Blythe is one.
Yeah, South Shields, strangely enough. That's another one they seem to be targeting, even though they had not a fantastically safe majority, but still in several thousands. But to get that first seat, it's extraordinarily difficult. Even though they're riding high in the polls, often that doesn't reflect into seats gained. Ask the Lib Dems about that.
Yeah.
So, don't know. Some people have been writing about UKIP has their bubble burst because their popularity is slowly going down. The Conservatives are beginning to steal some of their clothes. Are people getting a bit tired of Farage and his antics? There's a scandal just this week about, they have explained why, but one of their candidates has had to step down because of who knows, some financial... I'll better leave it at that.
Yeah.
So I would like to get... But stuff like that, it seems to be occurring.
Yeah, another party that people are talking about who might play a factor, a blight, a minimum one, is the Green Party. Now, given the industry up here in the North East, there's no chance of the Green Party's even threatening, right?
No. Not at all. And I thought their response to the budget and on that day was just dreadful, to be honest.
I think,
if you follow them on Twitter, it was just so unresponsive.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, what a great time. Because obviously every election you have these little, the smaller parties, shall we say, that can really do quite impressive things. We saw that with the Lib Dems, they had that huge surge. And the Greens, they could really do so well here, because people are struggling to think, you know, if you're a traditional Labour voter, where might I go next? But it just didn't happen.
I think
we're all things to all people at the minute. They're still essentially a protest group rather than a political group.
Yeah, well, I think...
With rounded policies that appeal...
Yeah, I think with the Green Party, they need a new leader and they need a new PR manager, judging over what's gone on in the past few weeks and months.
They were, you know, cooing over getting Jack Munro from the Labour Party over to the Green Party on the day of the budget, or it was the next day. I just thought, wow, is that all we've got to go at?
Yeah, nothing. Right, so I'm sure... Oh, one last question that we'll finish on. People keep talking about this as the most interesting election in recent memory. Do you guys tend to agree with that? Because I don't know, I'm kind of thinking I don't see a difference between this and 2010.
As far as the I don't know. 2010, I think we're all tired. I think there was a lack of energy running up to that. Everyone was kind of
wasn't it the economy's broke and it's you're to blame, we don't care, it's a global economic crash.
Yeah, you left us in this mess. Yeah. That kind of rhetoric. Yeah.
That was an angry election. I'm not sure what this one is. I would say this one is a more tired election.
No, I would say the contrary. I think in the 2010 election, everyone were willing to give David Cameron the benefit of the doubt, along with the nasty party, as they tried to the sort of tag they tried to live down. But things are different now. There's a great deal of concern up here about who's going to get into the next election. It's very important. It's so south-centric that it could have lasting effects on this region's economy, who gets into the next election. If I was to compare the character of the race, the feeling in the run-up to the election, I'd compare it to 1992, John Major against Neil Kinnock. Very hard to call, running neck and neck. I mean, I remember that. They were neck and neck, pulls right up to the final day.
Mm-hmm.
John Major, of course, eventually run. Will the Conservatives win this election? Will they get a majority? I don't think so, but time will tell, of course.
Can you see anyone getting an overall majority?
I can't personally.
No.
There's going to be some serious bargaining going on.
Oh, and on that note, I think we best leave it there. We'll be following the race very keenly, as always, in the paper and online. And we're going to start... The Week in the News is going to start becoming a political podcast very soon. So we'll make sure to keep you updated on when that's happening. And from myself, Mike and Kate, we'd just like to say thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you soon.